Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. I'm Leslie Dorries. When I hear people talk about relationships, there are some things that they say that make me just want to go screaming into the night. Things such as, it's my job to make my partner happy, or I want to be loved unconditionally. And then on the flip side, we're two different people. The underlying belief on that one is what drives irreconcilable differences. The problem is that all three of these things at the same time. First, it's only your job to make you happy. You cannot make your partner happy. That's their choice. Their feelings are up to them. The best you can do is to be supportive in helping them to be happy. But in addition, if you believe that your job is to make them happy, then the flip side is you can't ever do anything that makes them unhappy, which basically means you can never disagree, and therefore you can't really be you. Which then brings it into opposition to that second one about loving unconditionally. Because if you can't be you, how can you be loved unconditionally? And a bigger question, and the one that I have a problem with unconditional love, is if you want to be loved unconditionally, does that mean that you're willing to love unconditionally? And shouldn't some healthy healthy relationships overall come with conditions? Would it be okay if someone hits you or disparages you on a regular basis? Are you still supposed to love them? As Robert Frost wrote, good fences make good neighbors, and I believe good boundaries make good relationships. So therefore, there have to be some conditions. And as far as being two different people, well, you always have been. Now you're just focusing on those differences and possibly making them bigger than they really are. And my guess is that when people say that they are focusing on the differences, they're not focusing on the positive differences. They're focusing on the negative ones. And this is the problem with negatives. They are incredibly powerful. We pay much more attention to negatives. Think about the last time you had a positive interaction, customer service interaction. Did you go and tell your friends all about it? Probably not. But if you had a bad one, my guess is you told everybody you walked into that day. And that's the power. It takes three positive interactions to balance out one negative, and it takes 4 to 5 positive interactions for every negative one to pull the relationship into positive territory. So maybe you don't believe all of these statements, but believing and acting on any one of them can still cause problems in your marriage and relationship. So joining me today to help make sense out of these and other unhelpful relationship beliefs are Dr. Joni Frater and Esther Lustig. They're relationship gurus, sex researchers, they speak on the college circuit, and they're co-authors of the Amazon bestseller, Love Her Right. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks, Leslie. It's our pleasure.
Thanks, Leslie. We're happy to be here.
Well, so as I said, we have all these weird ideas. We have these myths. I call them myths, about what makes good relationships. And I know that you guys spend a lot of your time going out and talking to young people about what their expectations are. So what are some of the things that you guys are running across?
We're finding, especially amongst the college-age students, that they have absolutely no idea what a healthy relationship is. And we're looking at a world filled with mixed media messages, hypersexualization, kind of a disassociation of their minds and their bodies, no parameters on what boundaries, what even makes up healthy relationships. So we start off by talking about the 4 main pillars of a healthy relationship.
Okay, and so that sounds great. 4 pillars.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
You know what? They are so simple, and they are not in any particular order. The first one's honesty. If you and your partner are not going to be honest with each other, then how can you be in integrity in a relationship?
And it sounds pretty simple on the surface.
On the surface, it really does, doesn't it, though? And yet, there are a lot of people who lie in the parameters of their relationship.
And yet, you know, just to interject, Leslie, that one of the things that we talk a lot about is right now, on a national scale, one of the fastest-growing risk groups for STD transmission are married African-American women. Because when their partners cheat on them, regardless of who they cheat with, they don't have the courtesy of wrapping it first. And the last way
right.
you want to find out that you've got an STD, that your partner is cheating on you, is by getting an STD.
Actually, that's happened a couple of times in my office. That's how the women found out their husbands had been unfaithful.
Not a surprise.
And it's not only is just knowing you got this disease devastating, but how you got it is devastating.
Absolutely,
okay, so.
Because if the constraints of your relationship are monogamy, then you've just destroyed one of the main pillars of your relationship.
Right, and, you know, I mean, and I know that there's a lot of people out there now talking about whether monogamy is possible or whether it's even desirable. And my viewpoint is you know, and this, I'll say this to the people that I work with, whatever you decide is fine, but you have to be in agreement. It's not like one of you can think you're monogamous and then the other one doesn't want to be monogamous, but I want to be with you, so I'm going to pretend I'm monogamous, which, again, goes right back to that. You're being dishonest.
Right.
You're being dishonest with yourself and with your partner.
Exactly.
And, you know, we've gotten into arguments over monogamy versus polyamory, and, you know, I don't like to share my toys, so I know that monogamy only works for me.
Right.
I'm not a good liar. So it really, it wouldn't work in my relationship.
And, you know, Leslie, exactly going back to what you said as far as, you know, good fences make good neighbors, strong boundaries in a relationship are what create that strong foundation. And if part of your foundation is an agreement on monogamy and one of you violates that consciously,
right.
you know, then what are you saying? You're saying that part of the foundation of our relationship is no longer the case, is no longer true for me.
Well, and I think that, you know, and I think that there's a problem. And I don't know if you run across this. This kind of goes into maybe what comes from, I don't know, I call them the great they, whoever they are that decide, you know, what we should and shouldn't be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this idea that, you know, a lot of couples never actually formally sit down and have a discussion about, are we going to be monogamous? And, oh, by the way, what does that look like?
You know, it's funny you say that, and it's especially true with young people that we work with. So we are finding that is really the case with the younger generation of today's college students, that the way they communicate is electronic.
Yeah.
So if you can't have a conversation in 140 characters or less, they're not interested. You know, and you can't have a really in-depth, honest and open conversation about what the boundaries and definition of your relationship is if you're not willing to actually have a full conversation.
Right. So I know we're talking about pillar number one, which is honesty. Mm-hmm. What's pillar number two?
Pillar number two is equality, that both people have an equal, and I'm not saying 50-50 all the time because there's no such thing as 50-50. That happens all the time. So,
right.
But you both have an equal allowance to put information into the relationship. You deserve to have an equal amount of personal time and personal headspace, and, you know, you shouldn't be tied together like Velcro. Nobody should be controlling the situation more than one person is. And, you know, and sometimes that happens. You know, we have these old role model perceptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when it comes to gender roles. You know, for traditional heterosexual relationships, it's definitely, you know, really difficult for a lot of people to get out of that mentality of, you know, what are the particular jobs or responsibilities or role that each particular gender plays in the relationship. Those lines can get a little blurred when you have same-sex relationships, but there are power dynamics in every relationship. So
well,
when we
sure.
talk about, you know, we talk about equality, what we really mean is that everybody gets an equal say into the things you do, the time you spend, whether you spend it together or separately, and that you start out with the basic assumption that from a power perspective that both of you are equal.
And that also spills over into the financial situation of
relationships. Oh, boy, does it ever.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and that everybody should have access to their own money, and how you put your money together needs to be really discussed and mutually agreed upon.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, and I love the conversation about equality and the power struggle, because that, to me, that is exactly what makes a marriage unique. It's the only, I mean, it's the only intimate, and this is committed relationships too. I'm just, you know, talking about marriage, but it's the only relationship that we, number one, intimate, you know, relationship that we're, that we're, you know, intertwined with another person in just about every way possible, because it's legal and it's emotional, and that, but you know, that we enter into as equals. Every other relationship like that we're born into, and there's a hierarchy. You know, mom, you know, I tell my kids, you know, I'm the benevolent dictator and I'll listen to you, but I make the decisions.
Right.
You know, and even in siblings there's a hierarchy, but this is the only one that we truly are equals, and I think it's one of the things that makes it so difficult.
Well, do you think it makes it difficult because, you know, functionally, when we grow up, we learn how to relate to our parents. So we're really learning how to parent, not how to partner.
And I agree.
Yeah, so when we go into a relationship, we go in with this preconceived notion of who's going to have greater power and greater say, but that's not true anymore in this world. You know, women want equal rights. They want to be able to work. They want to be able to have children. They want to be able to look sexy, and they want to be able to look casual and, you know, and have all of these things and still have a happy relationship. And everybody,
well, and I think that's true for men too. And I mean, and I think, you know, that men don't necessarily want to be relegated to the, you know, the stereotypes of the 1950s and 60s. It's like
right.
the first time I ever watched Mad Men, I broke out into a cold sweat.
God.
And
oh,
oh my God, I'm so glad.
We could never watch that show. It made us absolutely crazy. And everyone we know is like, oh, it's such a great show. And we're like, it makes me want to rip my hair out. Like, I can't stomach that level of misogyny. It just makes me nuts.
Oh yeah, you know, and I think in some ways men were just as you know straitjacketed, you know, to get out of the role. I mean, I was just at a party the other night and met a couple, and it was my husband's work party, and I, you know, we were having a conversation and about what everybody does, and he said he was a stay at home dad, and I went, way to go. It's like, woohoo.
And there's so much more of that. It's so amazing to us, too, as we, you know, travel around the country and we talk to young people, their perspective as to what it would mean to be a parent and to be in a long-term relationship is also shifting. A lot of that because that our culture is changing and it is evolving to a place where the traditional gender roles really no longer apply, particularly when you have so many more people who are exposed to other, you know, friends and family members that happen to be in same-sex relationships, so you have a different definition of what it means,
sure.
Particularly for same-sex couples who have children. You know, there's a lovely opportunity there to kind of challenge gender roles and be like, you know, who's going to be more maternal or more paternal, and does it really matter? Is it really more parental than anything else? And, you know, the same goes for the whole generation of college kids today, having parents who would rather have their kids as friends than to treat them as a parent would. And
yeah,
there's
well.
A level. There's a level. You and I can talk about that all day. We know that.
There's a part of me that just broke out into cold sweat about that. But okay.
Well, and it's funny because part of the problem with understanding these four pillars is because so many of the students we talk to don't have any healthy role models for relationships.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why I really wanted the two of you on this show, and why I'm doing this show is to help people understand that. And since we're talking about this, I just want to remind my listeners that they're listening to Happily Ever After on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking today with Dr. Joni Frater and Esther Listeek on the four pillars for healthy relationships. And so we've done one and two. So what's number three?
Well, number three is respect. And, you know, you mentioned this in the beginning of the hour, Leslie, that one of the things that we don't necessarily understand how to address in our culture right now, because it's so prevalent, is the conversation around domestic violence and what happens when relationships spin out of control. And for any of us who watched the Super Bowl the other night, you know, we saw for the first time a domestic violence public service announcement during the Super Bowl, which was the largest audience ever, 114 million people, over 114 million people watched the Super Bowl this year. So having that much contact and an opportunity to reach out to people who are particularly watching the commercials, which is really cool.
Right.
you know, and looking for that kind of inspiration to have conversation. That's what public service announcements are about, right? It's to create conversation. So for us – having spoken to students, particularly this year in light of the Ray Rice video being released, mm-hmm. and having a real public conversation around how, not only domestic violence, but how do we understand and channel aggression? What are acceptable versus unacceptable ways to channel that aggression out of our personalities, out of our bodies, and not take it out on the people who are closest to us? Right.
Well, and I also have to kind of step up because I actually did my career got started working with a domestic violence organization, and mm-hmm. I need to make sure that people understand that women can be both the perpetrators as well as the victims. It's not as frequent.
And we've seen just as much domestic violence and relationship violence and inequalities in same-gender mm-hmm. relationships as we have in heterosexual relationships.
And
so
also
right.
in non-sexual relationships,
yeah, exactly.
too.
Right.
So, you know, and it comes down to respect. Nobody is talking about how do you speak to another person. If you constantly call somebody a loser, do you think they're going to want to be sexual with you? I mean,
well, unfortunately, sometimes they do, which is the really scary thing, but
right.
but they shouldn't.
But they shouldn't because they're not allowing themselves to be respected, and then I would have to, you know, question that person about how they feel about themselves and why they're allowing that to happen
right.
and that they deserve better.
Well, and, you know, an understanding that respect is one of the four pillars really is a great way to understand that nobody goes from I love you to hitting you overnight, right? That is
right.
That is a behavior that escalates over time. And disrespecting someone, you know, talking badly about them in front of their friends,
right.
you know, being public displays of talking down to someone or belittling someone, that's abuse, right? And that abuse can spiral into a physical altercation down the road.
But can you talk a little bit, because you know, one of the things that I've learned over the years is that language, especially the English language, sometimes is a little slippery. So
mm-hmm.
can you define what you mean by respect? It's a nice big word. I love it. But what does it actually mean in practice?
I think that my initial reaction is to kind of go back to where my head goes when I'm in yoga. And when we're done our yoga practice, we look at each other and we go, namaste, which means the light in me, the divine light in me, acknowledges the divine light in you.
Mm-hmm.
And if we acknowledge each other on a very core level, and then we do that mind, body, and spirit in words and actions, now
mm-hmm.
we're showing respect. We're showing respect for ourselves because we would never want anyone to act that way towards us, and we're showing that love and respect to our partners and other intimate people in our lives. So I think that's my gut reaction. Esther, do you want to add?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to define it. I think that, you know, one of the things we say to our students is, part of the dissolution of understanding of respect in our culture, I think, I really blame on reality television. You know, we have become a petty,
mm-hmm.
cruel, and just faithless-based community now when we all just want to turn on the television and watch people snarling at each other. And
right.
part of the problem is that what those shows tend to educate on and show us, by example, is that you get to talk to the person that you're supposed to love and respect, right, with less respect
mm-hmm.
than you show the person at the drive-thru.
Right.
And that's terrifying. So
right.
when we look at students and say, this is not reality. I don't care what they call it. This is not reality. Because if you don't want somebody handing you your teeth or you don't want to end up in an emergency room or a courtroom, you better not act like these people. And a lot of times they really look at us like we have six heads and a tail. It's a little scary.
Right, because these people are famous.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And isn't this how you're supposed to act? And, you know, I'm like you guys. I mean, it's reality, just not any reality I want to be a part of.
Certainly.
But how do we get people past? Because here's the deal. I mean, and I've heard this, you know, I've heard this. But they say that they love me.
Mm-hmm. So what? Well, talk is cheap.
Well, first of all,
right?
I love
well,
you.
Well, absolutely.
I love you are three words that can be interpreted in a thousand different ways.
Right.
I think that people need to say, I love this about you, or I love this quality
right.
about you. And I want you to love this quality about me, because it's not just it's also respecting your body.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more to all of this than just four words. So we can take it pretty much anywhere.
Right. Well, this goes back to my comment when I hear about unconditional love. It's like, you know, I'm a parent, and I think that at most unconditional love exists parent to child, and sometimes I wonder if it
actually does.
I
actually think that unconditional love only exists from pet to human. I really don't think that other than
right.
domesticated animals that anyone else is really capable of unconditional love, and frankly, even my dog has managed to give me dirty looks. So,
well,
you know,
and like I said, I'm not sure they should. I'm not sure it should be unconditional.
Right.
Well, yeah. Why should it be unconditional? I mean, all relationships are negotiations. They're
mm-hmm.
all give and takes. It's all
compromise.
Collaboration and compromise, and that
mm-hmm.
has to be an ongoing conversation. So I don't think that there could ever be a situation where it's unconditional, because if it's totally unconditional, you're going to get perpetually crushed.
Right.
So, and I think that you're setting yourself up for a lot of disappointment that way. You know, that
right.
old movie where they said, "You complete me,"
ugh.
Is
oh.
a bunch of crap. That makes me mental.
Yeah.
I'll start
yeah.
doing
crap. That's another one that sends me running out into the night screaming.
Yes.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
exactly.
Okay.
We want everybody to be a whole person in and of themselves. And then when they get together with another whole person, it becomes magic.
Right. So we've got honesty, equality, respect. What's number four?
Responsibility. And when we use the word responsibility, the way we define that is, if you are a heterosexual couple and you are capable of getting pregnant when you are together in a sexual sense, then you are both responsible for preventing pregnancy if you're not ready to become parents.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever you are, regardless of the gender makeup of your couple, you're both responsible for preventing the spread of disease, especially if either one of you are no longer a virgin. So, you know, these are conversations in the real world that we have to have. You know, we live in Florida. And here in Florida, we have the highest HIV infection rate for 13 to 19-year-olds.
Oh, my God.
On a national,
yeah.
you know, it's terrifying, and the ethnic disparities are frightening. On a national level, 1 in 16 black men is going to get HIV in his lifetime. In northern Florida, it's 1 in 8. So we're talking about a really terrifying reality, particularly in people of color communities, where, you know, these conversations have to be open and honest and seriously responsible. You really have to talk about preventing what you're not ready to deal with in your life and keeping yourself healthy. That is your main responsibility, is that to keep yourself safe and healthy, and being responsible, too, for making sure that you and your partner feel safe in the relationship. I think safety is a
okay.
really important factor, too.
Okay. And again, like just like I said, I had this question about respect. What does it mean, in your guys' view, because I have my own view of it, what does it mean to be safe?
Well, that's a really good question, since 50 Shades of Grey is opening this week.
Oh,
yeah, it's a whole other source of entertainment we can talk about at another time.
Mm-hmm.
I think feeling safe, in our perspective, and Joni, you can help me with this, is that we really look at it as, if you're going to make yourself emotionally as well as physically vulnerable to another person, that you feel safe doing that. You feel safe putting yourself in another person's hands and saying, I trust you to treat me, mind, body, and soul, with love and affection and respect. And
okay,
that,
so if you don't feel that way, and I love that definition, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I love that definition, but you know, sometimes people, we've talked about not good relationship role models. You know, we've got this movie coming out, which we're not going to talk about. but, you know, but because, I mean, now, and I do know that some in the BDSM community are going to say safety is a big part of that community.
Absolutely.
And you know,
they're the best
community. I need to make that comment that, you know, but that is, again, specifically discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be honest, I never read 50 Shades of Grey. I probably should have for my business, but I heard it was so terribly written, and I don't have enough time to read well-written stuff, let alone poorly written stuff.
Which is absolutely
and
true,
we'll,
by the way.
We'll, yeah, we'll talk about that. Absolutely true. And we need
but,
to
but
read
what
it
if
for
nobody
our
knows? But what if nobody – how do we know what's safe? I mean, for me, you know, because I'm pretty in touch with myself,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's like listening, I think we all have that little voice inside of us that tells us when we're safe and when we're not safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
mm-hmm.
a question of whether or not it's actually been, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't even know. But, you know, it's been, you know, kind of allowed to happen, whereas a lot of times people are told, you know, they're actually told to ignore that voice.
Right.
Oh,
I mean,
Aunt Jimmy or Aunt, you know, Aunt Judy, yeah, let Aunt Judy kiss you. No, Aunt Judy gives me the creeps.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And when we try to tell everybody to do is to be their own best authority. If the hair on the back of your neck starts to stand up, listen to it. Mm-hmm. It is your inner voice saying, I'm not comfortable. And then you have every right to step back and reassess where you're at and go, why am I not comfortable? What can I do about this? Am I okay with this? And if it becomes a deal breaker, then you really need to reassess your relationship. Because in our world, we tell everybody that the goal line for the ultimate relationship is that you should be intimate, erotic friends. So if you're going to be friends, why would you disrespect them or be dishonest or break any of these pillars? Because mm-hmm. this is the one person you want to have on your side all the time.
Right.
So you have to step up and you have to walk the walk.
And I think it's also important because you could feel unsafe with somebody who truly may actually be trustworthy and, you know, not necessarily because of something that they're doing, but triggers for you. And again, you still need mm-hmm. to stop and go, okay, whoa, what is this about? And you could be with somebody for 5, 10, 15 years and suddenly, whoa, this situation over here doesn't make me feel safe. So I need right. my listeners to understand this isn't like just in the beginning kind of a relationship thing, although it's really important. Don't ignore that information if it's early on. But even if you've been with somebody for quite a while, there could be something, and it doesn't necessarily mean the relationship has to end, but like you said, stop, take a step back, and take a look at it.
Well, and I'll give you a good example of that. When we talk to our students about negotiating what you're comfortable doing with someone sexually, even if it's somebody new, or if you're in a relationship and you want to redefine your parameters, that one of the things we talk about is having an open conversation about the things that turn you off. So, mm-hmm. you know, for the reality that 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men in their lifetime will be a victim of rape, incest, domestic violence, or stalking. And those mm-hmm. numbers are terrifying, but what that means is that we all have buttons that can get pushed, right? So we all have
right.
an opportunity to get turned off and have the hair on the back of our neck stand up and be like, hell no, whatever's happening is no longer happening, turn on the TV, we're done. And
right.
part of that, you know, is understanding what those buttons are and saying, I respect you enough and I'm responsible in this level of communication that I'm not going to push those buttons by accident. So I want to make sure that our experience emotionally as well as sexually is as you know, beautiful and as mutually beneficial and entertaining as it can possibly be with that level of respect of what our histories are.
And I think that's, you know, and I think that's a good point because I think one of the things, and I don't know if you see this, and it's part of the reason why I really wanted John to talk about young people because they're just starting to learn about romantic relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But unbeknownst to most of our children or young people, we all actually were young people. We didn't, and so we may still be doing some of the things that we learned early on. And you know, I had one of the guys that I thought, you know, college boyfriends that, you know, I was sure I was going to marry him. The way we broke up wasn't great because I actually found him in bed with somebody else.
Oh,
and
dear.
You know, if I could find him now, I would thank him.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because had I married him, it would have been a disaster, but it made me stop and examine what I believed about relationships, what I believed about me,
mm-hmm.
and what I believed about relationships. And so I think I was 22, mm-hmm. I got the greatest gift. Now, at the time, I didn't think it was so great. But looking back on it, it actually was the greatest gift I ever got because it allowed me to stop and not continue down what would have been a very destructive
sure.
pathway.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. In fact, well, when we speak, if we do our full relationship program, we also speak to the 5 love languages by Gary Chapman
mm-hmm.
because
right.
it really succinctly puts people together in terms of what their personal needs are and in what order of priority. And responsibility in the relationship also means that it's your responsibility to make sure that your partner's emotional needs are being met.
Mm-hmm.
So you have
right.
to know how to feed that love bank.
Right, and I tell people that the your emotional needs and the emotional needs of your partner need to become the emotional needs of the couple
mm-hmm.
and that meeting the needs is non-negotiable. How they get met is where
right.
is where
absolutely.
The talk comes in.
Absolutely. I think that's brilliant, actually. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to say we've been talking to Dr. Joni Frater and Esther Lustig of sexedbootcamp.com about how to improve your relationship, the four pillars that you need. So the one thing that I really need to say to my listeners is that it is never, 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 never too late to make your relationship better. You may think, well, I'm already married, you know, what am I going to do, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But in the immortal words of Dr. Phil, you can make the right decision or you can make the decision right. And if you have children, they have a big stake in you making the decision right. And then the only question that needs to be answered is, if you don't make it better now, when will you? So, Joni and Esther, where can people find you? Where can they find out more about your four pillars and your speaking schedule?
They can find out more about our college speaking situation on sexedbootcamp.com. That's where, and on Facebook, where I post up a lot of stuff about relationships and about, you know, STI prevention and healthy relationships. And our book, Love Her Right, which is on Amazon, which we don't particularly speak to the four pillars of relationships, but we speak more to how to, especially for men, how to keep things kind of fun and sassy. It's kind of a fun pillow book. And
right.
We just hope that everybody looks at their relationships and says, you know, and like you said in the beginning, look at all the positives and look at those first and saying, yeah, okay, so maybe there are some negatives here. And let's look at them and how we can enhance and make those better and put those into the other category. What do we both need to do to put that together?
Well, thank you both so much for being here. And remember, those pillars are honesty, equality, respect, and responsibility. Want to get that out there. And I want so join me next time on Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning, when I will be joined by Steve Pear of Spouse Dates for a discussion on how to keep the romance front and center through the years. And until then, stay loving.